This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
And hey, welcome to This Week in Wrestling, NWA On Demand. I am Pete, and of course I'm joined by my friend Johnny Sorrow. Johnny, how you doing?
Great. Just great.
That's awesome, man. I know you've been working hard, but yeah. Hey, and I had enough time to watch some wrestling. How was your Thanksgiving, man?
It was very good. You?
Good. Yeah, I got to go home, visit my family, and had my nephew kept on reminding me that last time he saw me, he beat me in Monopoly, so that was excellent. And I haven't seen him since that last time, which was months ago, because they live in Alabama. But my brother, because he's paralyzed, he's pretty much in rehab all the time. And so whenever my family goes to visit, which they stay in Alabama during the summertime, usually about a month and a half out of the summertime, my brother goes with him, so he sees him, so he tells me, yeah, not only is he telling you about this today, he talked about it constantly when he was in Alabama, like, this is epic, so now I've got to practice my Monopoly skills. I'm going to whip this little 7-year-old next time.
Okay, yeah. Well, here's what you do. Here's my Monopoly lesson. When I was a kid, around his age, we were playing Monopoly on a Sunday afternoon, and it got down to me and my dad. And I lost, and I was trying everything. I'll trade you this property. Can I sell you? He's like, no, you lost. And I got upset and cried. And he's all like, tell me. He's like, no. He's like, you know, you don't cry. Losing's a part of life. Give me that whole speech. And he's like, next time you figure out a way to. And I took it all the wrong way. So I came up with a strategy, and it's buy the cheap properties, Baltic, you know, the purple and light blue.
Right.
And then try to buy one of every other color.
Uh-huh.
Just one.
Yeah,
and sit on them, but don't. And the whole thing is like, you don't sell them for like way more money. You never, ever sell them, and you build your hotels on Skid Row there, and you just slowly beat everybody until they all get frustrated and quit. So, I played that way the next time. My dad was like, "You're taking all the fun out of the game." I was like, "Well, you told me I needed to learn how to win." You took it the wrong way.
You taught me the slumlords practice of New York,
yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah, you taught me.
Right. All right, man, let's kick it off. We have four matches that got dropped this week. Mm-hmm. The first one up is Terry Allen, pre-Magnum TA, versus Kelly Kinski from November 27th, 1981. What were your thoughts about this match?
First off, you can already see that Magnum's or Terry's tights are starting to get a little smaller. you can judge how over and how high on the card Magnum is over the years by how smaller and smaller his trunks get, and they're starting to get a little smaller in this one. This was great, Paul Bosch. Apparently, he makes this announcement for the first time in 33 years of Houston wrestling. Tonight, a lady is the director of the show.
Yep.
And he then proceeds to shit on her. he's like, but she's having a little trouble as one of the cameras wasn't working correctly, and she's running around very, very concerned, but. There's been a camera malfunction, so we might have to put an asterisk by her name. That a girl, Sadie. Jesus Christ. And then he has the great line, you bounce a man on his head and he can change his mind fast. Yes, he can. But you definitely see, you know, it is what it is. It's a young Terry Allen and a young Kelly Kinski. And it's okay. I mean, it's perfectly solid, you know, but it's exactly what you'd see at the beginning of a card of two young guys who have potential going out there and having a wrestling match.
Exactly.
And at the end, when Magnum gets fired up, you and it's easy to say because we know what happened.
Yeah.
You know, with him becoming a star. But even if you didn't, when he gets fired up here and pissed off at Kineski, he immediately exudes star.
Yeah, it's the stuff probably Dusty saw on him around this time. They got him into Mid-South, and then into eventually Crockett and stuff, you know.
Yeah, and then of course at the end, after this epic battle, we get an announcement from Paul Bosch saying that you can rent a Love TV and stereo system. I was like, back in the day where you'd actually rent a television.
Yeah, right. It's Zenith or whatever. I don't even know what would be open, but I'm trying to think. Zenith would be one of them where you can rent to own. Yeah.
Rent to own. Rent a Love TV.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm with you completely. This is pretty much your basic underneath Young Lions match. A match where both guys get some time in the ring. They put on the basic match and get a feel for working in front of the crowd. You know, there wasn't anything incredible about this at all. Yeah, like you said, you can see that, and it's easy in hindsight that we know that Magnum did become a star. You see he had star qualities. He had that, you know, he had a good look to him. Kineski never really made it. Even with the father's name. And they always talk about how second-generation guys usually have that, they get it. But you know what, when we really look back on the history of wrestling, there's been plenty of second generation wrestlers who just did not make it.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if that's a valid talking point or not.
It's funny because I just listened to Cody Rhodes on Cabana's show, and he was talking about exactly that, how being second generation, there's aspects of it that help, but then there's aspects of it that doesn't. He was talking about his first match. He's like, I grew up around this business. You know, I grew as a kid, everything. I thought I know everything. And I went out there and I stunk.
Right.
You know, it's just being second generation isn't enough.
No. Yeah. You need to, you gotta have a lot of other things going for you. Most importantly, having star quality. I mean, that's not something you can, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody learn to be a star. I mean, I've seen people improve, like Miz, for example, but I've never seen anyone really have super drawing power who it was just innate, you know what I'm saying? Even when we watch old Hulk Hogan, you could see he had it, you know?
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, it's just those things. It's just that it, and we see a little bit of here in Magnum and stuff.
Well, you know, Bulldog Bob Brown.
Yeah. There we go. Hey, let's move over to the next match, which is Greg Valentine versus Tiger Conway Jr. For May 18th, 1979. This is actually the second time we've seen these guys work each other here in Houston. Tiger Conway is one of those guys who on the footage is, we don't really get to see. He's never really had a name really outside of Houston. He worked some Crockett as a jive tone back like in late 88, maybe early 88. But for the most part, he probably worked some Kansas City, I bet. And he just was a guy who never really broke out, but he was a pretty dang good baby face and a good worker. And I guess they never really saw him as box office, but I really have enjoyed everything I've really seen of him and stuff. What do you think of his performance and the match in general here with Valentine?
Well, I remember, first off, when I first started getting the magazines, and they'd ever occasionally have like, now a feature on the Young Lions of professional wrestling, and the After mags always included Tiger Conway Jr. He was always in that. Barry Windham was always one of them. Young Lions.
Again, it might be a connection with the father, you know.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten about the Jive Tones. I don't even think I ever actually saw them.
Yeah, him and Pez.
Yeah, that was right when I quit watching. So, okay. And it's a great name though. And this NWA Classic is the first time I've ever actually seen him wrestle. And yeah, he's a fun young baby face. He's 5'9", 6'3" with the afro.
The afro makes it. Yep, makes the height requirement.
A little, I was gonna drop in the Fletch reference there, but yeah, he's got some afro here, man. It's something. He's getting close to Meng levels. Giant fro here, and it's fun. The match is fine. Apparently, Mary Tyler Moore is the photographer in her snappy 1979 plaid pantsuit. But then we got Gino. And he's the one who's feuding with Tiger Conway. And apparently trophies are involved. And there's, according to Bosch, there's three trophies. Only two were left. Gino's smashed one, and he's got the pieces of it, or a piece of it, to start the match. And he gets on the mic, and he cuts a promo on Tiger and then calls him boy. You're like,
cheap. Went for the cheap heat.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's part of wrestling back then. Yeah. But, you know, it's stuff you watch now, and you go, oh. And I think I remember, I don't know if we talked about it or Kelly might have talked about it or I read it, that indeed Greg Valentine was billed as Johnny Valentine's brother.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was also, you mentioned, and they also had, they also pushed Buddy Roberts as Buddy Valentine as a brother also here in Houston.
And,
or Dale Valentine, I'm sorry, Dale Valentine. Yeah,
it's always hard, and it's always like when I hear that, like his brother John. I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah.
But then, so they have they're on a match. It's a fine match, you know. It's nothing to write home about, but it's fun. Two out of three falls, but as we get to the beginning of the third fall, that's when it kicks in for me because Gino's back, and he's at ringside because he said he's going to make Tiger eat the remnants of the trophy, and he's got. The piece of the trophy, he's shoving it in his mouth. He's like, look, this is what I'm going to do to you. And Gino's awesome. And right as the fall's about to start, Tiger does a running giant dive over the top rope to get at Gino on the floor. And it's awesome. It's like, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, he actually, in the first match, he did the same thing to Valentine in the first match they wrestled.
I don't remember, but... Yeah. But he gets there, and they're fighting, and he gets a whole Valentine has the stick, and he attacks Tiger Boy's beating up Gino, and he gets it from him. There's a DQ, Tiger wins, and then he whacks Gino in the shins.
Yeah.
The thing, and Gino's just laying there, like he broke his shin bone, and that whole third quote unquote fall. Just exploded, you know, and I was like, grab me. I'm like, oh, ow. You know, I was like, you know, I'm enjoying this, fun, you know, fine little match. And it is neat because Bosch, as we know, had no problem acknowledging every promotion.
Right.
Because we've talked about that. And he's like, Greg Valentine, you know, who's doing great things up in the WWWF, took Bob Backlund to a 1 hour draw twice in a row in Madison Square Garden. And now he's wanting to conquer Houston wrestling at the same time. And I was like, that's cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mentioned the same exact thing. I thought that was really cool and stuff. Yeah. I'm with you, man. I thought the stuff was really solid, except that third fall really was awesome because of the angle. Overall, I thought the match was solid stuff. And, you know, Gino comes out, and I mean, now it's cheap heat, but back then it was, you know, past it was normal. I one thing I did get a kick out of was Bosch on commentary talks about how Gino is angry because Tiger held his trunks on the pinfall, and Paul goes, but to be fair, we all saw it, but no one wanted to back up Gino on that side.
Well, yeah, what he said was, he's like, and Gino. Complained about that, and we have a picture, and the picture clearly shows it, but nobody in that arena, you know, cared.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there you go.
Exactly. I loved it. It's like he's bad, but all my fans weren't gonna lie, weren't gonna tell the truth for Gino. I mean, which is pretty much essentially what he says.
He's like, yeah, they're not gonna rat him out, you know. Yeah,
I love that. But pretty much the match is more of a setup, obviously, for Conway and the Gino dynamic. And so the first two falls are just, you know, basic work, but interesting. Like Conway, he shows a ton of fire. He throws a decent punch here. But what I really liked was his arm work here. And it looked like he was really hurting Valentine with it. He was, like, throwing punches at the shoulder, working the arm bar, we're doing arm cranks. I mean, just really basic work, but all looked on level and really hurt. And then Valentine's work was, you know, his normal solid stuff, and he was a great anchor here, and his job was to make Tiger look good, and he did his job really well. And in the third fall, it was just awesome with the interference blowing up in Gino's face and his sell of the hitting him in the kneecap of Valentine clubbing him in the knees was just tremendous. And so the angle here sets up, you know, future matches with Tiger, and also, you know, they might book a Gino-Valentine match based off the finish here too. So you get two birds with one stone off that finish. So to me, that's a good finish to further a program and to get it, and you can take the program in another direction with Gino and Valentine, since obviously Valentine's just making spot show shots here because he is, you know, working full time in New York. I give it 3 stars. I enjoyed it, a lot of it, and especially the closing angle and stuff.
Gino was holding his leg like Nancy Kerrigan.
Yeah.
Why me?
Exactly. Let's take a break here, and we can hear some shows on the Pro Wrestling Only Network.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation, Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with The Sports Lounge, The TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, and we're here to look at Butch Reed versus Dick Slater from December 29th, 1985. And this is a match that has a lot of history. They've been feuding for months now. Slater had injured Reed's neck. They were going after the North American title, which eventually would turn into UF UWF title would be they do a tournament later on in the year or next year, early in the year next year. But right now it's over the North American title, and this one is actually for Dick Slater. Dark Journey is Dick Slater's valet, and if Butch wins the match, he gets Dark Journey for 30 days.
Yeah.
What you make of this, man?
I loved this, and I he gets Dark Journey for 30 days. Growl. And but first Dick gets on the mic and offers him $2,000 to call this off. You know, and Butch Reed ain't having that. You know. Although he could use the money, considering the fact that his tights are just like the letters on the back that say Hacksaw Reed are just peeling off. He just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
But they get into an early punch exchange that just is one of those awesome pro wrestling punch exchanges. That was great, and a great tackle. It knows that the ref is Tommy Gilbert, and I guess so at one point the magic is on. I'm enjoying the shit out of it, and Dick Slater tries to take a powder, I guess, and I can't remember what happens, but he's leaving. He thinks the match is won, but they restart it or something. I don't remember. But he goes, "Get your fanny back in here." And everyone's like, "Hey!" And he gets back in. And then all of a sudden, you hear just one guy go, "Hey, Tommy Gilbert, you suck." Which we're going to get into because this is the same night as our main event.
Yeah.
And the ringside fans, there's no commentary on these. The ringside fans, and it sounds like it's a bunch of teenagers, definitely. It's definitely a bunch of teenagers, boys and gals, and they're awesome. You can hear everything they say. They're super into everything, and they're just heckling and screaming and cheering and love them. And I enjoy the match. You know, Dick Slater cheats to win, and so he doesn't get Dark Journey this time. And before we get into what you thought about it, I wrote this down. And we're going to put this under the title Naive or Stupid. And I'm talking about myself. Because at the time, and this is right when I first started watching them, was when we first got this television. And the whole heel getting heat dynamic fact of the fact that he's a white guy with a black girlfriend, and this is the South, I didn't get it. You know, I wasn't aware of it. And when someone first said, that was part of it, I was like, oh, really? Why? Now, is this being a Northeast person who's naive, or am I just dumb? Because it's like when people said one of the reasons that Doom got heat was because they were come out led by a white woman. I was like, that was part of it? I didn't think that had anything to do with it.
Yeah, but by 1989 with Doom, I don't think that was a true talking point anymore. But
people say it. People
yeah,
say that.
People did say it, right. In 1985, I do think it's a very valid talking point.
It never occurred to me that would be a reason why people booed Dick Slater because he had a black girlfriend. Because all I was like, first time I saw her, I was like, why would you boo that? She's hot.
Yeah, because I mean, back in '85, still there were sort of laws where you could, like, if you wanted to sell your house, you could still not sell it to there was like a clause where you could not sell your house to like a black couple and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus, not
if you want to keep the one neighborhood white. Yeah.
Not where I was from.
Yeah, well, they used to be there because I remember hearing my parents talk about it, how disgusted they were with somebody about because they did that. As a young kid, I remember hearing that and stuff. So,
I got it. It was like even up to Sister Sherry with Harlem Heat, and people were trying to say that was the way they were getting heat was because she was a white woman with black eyes. And I was like, what? In 1996? I don't know.
Again, it's the wrestling bubble.
You know? I guess so.
Yeah.
But anyway, I enjoyed the match. Now, we're gonna get into everything pales compared to what we're going to talk about in a minute.
Right.
But I thought this was perfectly fine. You know, I enjoyed it. Dick Slater is one of my favorites. And Butch Reed, I think, over the years, especially recently, he's gone from someone I think a lot of people just thought was a big muscular stiff, and now we recognize that Butch Reed was an amazing wrestler.
Yeah, I am with you completely on Reed being incredible. I'm not as big of a fan on the match as you. I didn't hate it by any stretch of the imagination. I gave it 2 3/4 star match. I just thought the buyout would be worked in a more violent fashion. And instead, we see the match was worked more with good psychology, but it lacked something for a blood feud. And these guys were having a blood feud. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, a couple of matches ago, they were in a double bloody brawl. Butch Reed was having the neck, had the collar on the neck thing going. And so we didn't get that here. And we see that Reed had the neck injury. So both guys worked the match around the neck, Reed in revenge spots, which made sense, but they just weren't nasty enough. And Slater worked right after Reed's neck because he had an injured neck, had a neck injury. And I mean, I like those, but again, it lacked a spark to me. And
I'm wondering if maybe the lack of, say, blood is because they were either following Ted Murdoch or Ted Murdoch was about to follow them.
Yeah.
And it was maybe they were like, okay, you know, we want to save the violence and the juice for that match and work this a different way.
Which makes perfect sense. Now, I can understand that. But we've seen Mid-South where we've seen dog collar matches,
cage
matches. So they never really worried too much about that.
Maybe that was Bosch, though. You know?
Yeah, this is true. But I can buy that argument. I mean, I can buy into it. So
because I was wondering the same thing. And yeah. I was like, well, maybe that's why, because it was going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, and I could totally buy that, because, I mean, at the time, DiBiase and Murdoch, this angle, Reed and Slater were coming to an end while DiBiase and Murdoch was just starting, so I could see that, too, you know. And you could say Reed was just trying to win, kind of like Steamboat trying to win the title from Savage at Mania. They've had their blood matches, and now he's trying to get Dark Journey for the ultimate insult, and instead of trying to punish him, he tried to win the match, and I you know, we could, that's true, but it just still felt out of place to me. And then we see Slater dung his knee at one point, and Reed worked over the leg and went for a figure four, and then the finish, I was just mind blowing to me. I thought beating Reed twice was terrible, and I didn't understand why we had Slater pin him with his feet on the ropes one time, they restart it.
And that's then, what it was.
Yeah, and then we come back and he gets pinned again. I know, like, what the hell? I mean, maybe that was just to trick the audience, like, oh, there's no way Reed's losing now, but to get pinned twice. But Jesus, it just.
Well, that's probably exactly what it was, because when you do the whole get your ass back in here, you're conditioned to think, uh-oh, you know, he's not going to get away. Oh, he does. And how much longer was Reed sticking around anyway?
Oh, man, wow. I want to say through 86, maybe. So it felt like he went to WWF in 87.
It was 86.
Was it? Okay, so maybe maybe this might have been his last run, really. When I think about it, I can't think of what other feud he had.
Well, the reason I say is because when I started watching, it was right around here, and then Butch Reed is not around at all. It's become Slater and... Jake, I think.
Yeah, it was Slater and Jake.
And Sawyer comes in too. And then Reed just wasn't around.
Yeah, so maybe this might have been a swan song. So beating him twice wasn't so bad. I think we need to look. I need to look back because the dates are so hard to remember.
He's like, fuck this. I'm gonna join the rodeo.
Yeah, and stuff. and all that jazz. But I mean, that's the match, man. We're gonna take another break here. So we can do a little business, pass on a really important piece of information to you guys. And I mean, we hope you feel the way we do.
All of us here at the PWO Place to Be Nation were saddened to hear of the passing of Adam Cech after a valiant fight against cancer. Adam had been a member of our little community for some time, and he will be missed. He leaves behind a loving wife and two young sons, and our love and condolences go out to them and all of his family and friends. During his battle, Adam had said that listening to the podcasts on the feed helped him get through some of those tough times during his fight. So we'd like to ask everyone out there to help lend a hand to his family. A GoFundMe page has been established for future educational expenses for his boys and to fulfill his plans for the boys to see a Packers game at Lambeau Field. Whatever you can donate will be greatly appreciated and will be put towards helping this young family navigate a future without Adam. Just head over to GoFundMe.com and put in Adam's Pack - Helping Adam's Family in the search engine, and please give what you can. Thank you.
And we're back to talk Ted DiBiase versus Dick Murdoch from December 29th, 1985. And I just looked, this match did main event the show, so that might have been one of the reasons why they didn't do this brutal match on the Reed and Murdoch. And then I looked up, and that was his last date in Houston. So Reed's last date in Houston. So there might be a double reason why we got that finish on the double, beating him twice, and we didn't get this violent match because, you know, he's leaving the territory. And the babyface fails on the big stip. So, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But, man, Ted DiBiase versus Dick Murdoch, this match is, you know, based off the big Ric Flair angle where DiBiase all of a sudden gets his opportunity to was selected as a late notice to challenge Ric Flair for the NWA World Title. Originally it was Butch Reed, but he had an injury to his neck, so he wasn't able to do it. And like prior to the match, Dick Murdoch made an unwelcome visit to the ring, and Murdoch seethed with like just full of jealous anger and stuff. That when Reed captured the attention of Flair and the promoters as NWA World Title contender, demanded that Ted should step aside and let him face Flair because he had just was feuding with Reed and trying to guilt trip Ted by pointing out how he helped Ted get his scholarship to West Texas State. Mm-hmm. And then he helped Ted break into professional wrestling, you know, really playing up the mentor part of
exactly.
it. Exactly. And then Ted was like, you know, pure, you know, respect mode is like, you know, no, I'm refusing this, but he did it politely. And then
Ted was a heel at the time,
but he thanked Murdoch and told him how much he did for him, and he's waited more than a year since his last shot at the NWA World title. I mean, and he may never get another chance. He can't give up this title shot. Ted displayed to that he had to go for it. Murdoch just, you know, went nuts, and he sucker punched Ted and threw him to the floor, and then he rammed DiBiase's head right into the ring post, busting him over big time. So he's like gushing with blood, and the paramedics are out trying to help Ted to the locker room, and Flair's now in the ring thinking he doesn't have to face anybody, but he was wrong. And then the paramedics are able to do the Spirit of 76 bandage to Ted, and then Ted comes all out, all concussed, but bloody.
But first, that was at the beginning of the show. And they take him back, and they're having to do, like, standby matches, and then Bill Watts is, you know, going, he's like, we don't know what's going to happen, and then when it's clear that Ted's coming back, Watts does that brilliant move of, I want to take this opportunity to warn people at home,
yes,
women and children, you know, that compression bandage on Ted's head could fall off possibly, and this could be gruesome and gory, and we're asking you to not watch, which equals everybody's gonna watch. You tell someone, yeah, don't watch this, holy shit, people are probably calling each other, you gotta turn on channels, whatever. and sure shit, when we get the one of the best instantaneous babyface turns of all time.
And then DiBiase is the ultimate babyface now. He's in the ring fighting Flair, but Murdoch comes out and ends up brain-bustering him on the floor. I mean, they do an 8 to 10 minute match. I think it might have only been 7 minutes, but it's like an incredible 7 minutes. And Murdoch comes out, brain-busts Ted on the floor. Paramedics are out. Murdoch gets suspended 45 days. Ted DiBiase is out indefinitely for the injury. And the main reason is because both these guys are doing a tour of Japan. And this is how they write them out of the story, out of the territory temporarily. And then come back to these freaking epic freaking matches. This match had been, like, we got it on the Mid-South set, but it was joined in progress. And now we got the complete thing. And holy crap, this thing was an incredible, one of the most epic matches I've seen in a long ass time. It was worked to perfection. What were your thoughts here, man?
This is so awesome. Now, I don't remember watching this on the Mid-South set because that came out almost 10 years ago.
Right, yeah.
And I watched it and probably saw it join the progress. Who knows? But to see this all the way through, beginning to end, and it's one of those lucky accidents. I sat down to watch this. I was in a great state of mind while watching this. And the quality is outstanding. And it is perfect. It's perfect. It's probably the best Ted DiBiase match I've ever seen. Definitely the best babyface Ted DiBiase match I've ever seen. And it's long, it's heated, it's perfect, and it's worked around almost nothing but punches and clubbering.
Yep.
That's pretty much it. There's Murdoch hits a branding iron at one point, and that might be the only actual move done in this match. And yet, I will confidently, at least my personal opinion, this goes on my little pantheon of greatest fucking matches I've ever seen. It's amazing. Murdoch is sublime. He's so good. He's so good. You look at this fat redneck dude, and he's just goes and goes. I was like, where does he get that fucking cardio? Look at him. And the way he sells everything, and every time Ted is coming back a little bit, he goes back to the injured neck. Oh, and keeps cutting him off. And it turns into a bloodbath. At one point, he's doing fist drops. And he comes up, and Dick's hand is covered in Ted's blood.
Yeah.
It's an amazing visual. It's so fucking awesome. And at one point, Ted goes for his loaded glove. And in one of those great... You know, for a few years, everyone booed when that thing came out, but not now, which I always love that when a heel turns babyface.
You've always said this. You always love it when, because you hate it a lot of times when the heel changes his tactics when he goes baby, but not Ted here. He still was the same person, yeah.
But you know you're going to get that pop because the audience has been waiting forever to cheer for him to cheat with that glove. And now, now this guy's worse than Ted was. And he's going to get it because we know. But he does a fist drop with the loaded glove and misses, and it hurts his hand.
Yep.
It's great. And it's struggling and struggling, struggling. Finally, he goes for like a back suplex. And Ted goes around and clobbers him with the fucking loaded glove. And they've been teasing it, and you're waiting for it and waiting for it. When he connects, that crowd explodes. Insane. This is one of the best performances of two guys I've ever seen, and I'm not exaggerating. This is that good. And as far as that crowd goes, again, this is one. You're getting full commentary from these teenagers at ringside. They're outstanding. It's go, Ted, go. Drop him on his head, Ted. Drop him on his fucking head. And
well, they wanted their revenge spots, you know?
Oh, they did, and they popped for it. And I just wrote down, God, this rules. And then, you know, he pins him, and here comes the Masked Superstar.
Yep.
And they're beating him down. And the crowd starts yelling, hey, fuck you! And some guy's like, you pussies! Pussies! And they're trying to get him out. And the guy on the public address is like, please clear the aisles! Please clear the aisles! And like everything about this is perfect. I find no faults with this. This is perfect professional wrestling.
Yeah, and actually at the end of this match and the angle, we actually got that like silent heat where it's like scary, where you think the audience, you can see all the audiences up, but they're almost like super quiet because they're in shock. And it feels like they want to kill Murdoch in the Masked Superstar.
Oh, they do.
You know,
but just watching the match, Ted DiBiase gives the most unbelievable babyface performance in this. And to think, just 2 months earlier, hated, yeah. And he's just it's the best. It's definitely the best. I think it's the best Ted DiBiase match I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's either that or the cage match with Duggan.
And that's the one I thought about, but then I'm like, that was really short, and it was like, okay, and he did a great job in that, and it was all about Duggan kicking his ass, and yeah. It's an amazing match. As far as his actual performance in a match, I can't think of a better one off the top of my head. I'm sure they're out there, but I've never seen one, and Murdoch is amazing here.
Yeah, the psychology is incredible with the neck.
His facial expressions, his staggering selling, the stuff that some people call too comedic, which I don't.
Don't at all.
But he's doing the split leg, trying to hold himself up, selling that he does, and just every note of this is perfection. Seriously, my favorite match of all time, everyone knows, is Magnum Tully in the cage, followed by the very first Lawler, Dundee, Losers Leave Town, as you know.
This is up on that level, you know?
This is at that level. This is at that level. It's in my top five, let's say. Right now, it's three behind those two.
That's pretty awesome.
Not overselling it. If you have not seen this in its entirety, take advantage of the offer, do whatever. Everyone needs to see this match, and it goes to show you it's not about, and I'm getting preachy, it's not about moves. It's not what wrestling is about. This is what it's about.
Exactly.
Because again, I was like, this is one of the best matches I've ever seen, and it's just punching. It's just punches.
Punching pretty much. And here's a question for you before I get into talking about the match. Now, I love the angle of Masked Superstar at the end, don't get me wrong. But it felt like DiBiase Murdoch still had money in a singles feud, but they totally transitioned into the DiBiase Doc versus Murdoch Masked Superstar feud. Why do you think they did that? I tweeted Meltzer out and asked him. I never got an answer. I might have to email his ass.
Because he doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't want his Twitter, nor does his Twitter followers probably. But I'm curious. Obviously they had definitely had more. They had cage matches to go and this and that. But they kind of blew off the feud right here because they had Ted go over right off the first set of matches. You know.
Well, again, I also recall at this time Murdoch isn't around for much longer.
That's true too.
And neither is Masked Superstar.
Masked Superstar just re-debuted. Remember, we watched that Lawler match.
He re-debuted, but he doesn't stick around.
No, he doesn't, because he's about to become X in WWF soon.
But and maybe it has also something to do with the fact that with the Ted babyface turn, Doc was a heel too.
Yeah.
They were a tag team. And so this is also, it was also a way to turn Doc.
Yeah.
By bringing him in. And now, because remember, the DiBiase Williams team was over huge as heels. They're the ones that beat the Rock and Roll Express and sent them on their way. And like, I remember in the After Mags, it was all about, you know, who can beat DiBiase and Doc. You know, it was a big deal.
They're my most underrated tag team in the history of wrestling, DiBiase and Doc.
And it's funny, once you finally get to see them work as a team, they're a great team. And so maybe that's it. Maybe it was a little rushed, but they knew they wanted to get it out of it, and that way you go, okay, you bring in your thug mass superstar, I got my power guy, and here comes Doc as a babyface, and now Doc and DiBiase are a babyface team to take these guys on, and getting that mileage out of it that way.
I can buy into that and stuff, and then they're also going with the Jake and Slater feud, so maybe they want to have a hot tag feud on top of it to go with it. You know, it's one of those things I need to talk to somebody and find out to get the right answers. It's one thing. I mean, but your speculation seems pretty.
Well, let's say we speculated about Butch Reed about 20 minutes ago, and we were right.
Right.
So come on, we've got a good track record here.
We do. You're absolutely right. And hey, not on this show, but we were damn right about Goldberg. Felt like more than a one-off match. But hey, man, let me talk about this match. This was epic stuff. Coming off, we already talked about how it was off the famous Ric Flair, Ted DiBiase, Dick Murdoch angle. And we get this grudge match, which I loved because Dick attacks Ted before the bell, and the announcer goes, and obviously this is a grudge match. And I loved it.
Because
so matter of factly, like, obviously. Cause,
ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then he attacks. It's obviously a grudge match. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
Loved it. And Murdoch is beating on him, and both guys are throwing bombs. Murdoch moves on to the neck, and that put Ted on the shelf for a bit. And the work on the neck is just rugged, and those turnbuckle shots looked absolutely sickening when he's just grabbing Ted by the throat and throwing him neck first into the freaking neck first into the buckles in the corners, and Ted's bleeding, and Dick the work in the cut, and the most I think what I like about the cuts is also the blood splatter on both guys' bodies. I mean, it's just
awesome.
It's so great. And the cut bleeds more and more. And as the cut is worked over, which we got what you need, Ted fights him off and he's throwing punches. Dick's bleeding now. Ted loads the glove and does a picture perfect fist drop, which I've always loved Ted's fist drops. It's him and Lawler do the two best.
Mm-hmm.
He misses, though, and hits the mat. And Ted's selling the hand big time. And actually, both guys are selling like this has been in a war. Dick goes for the brainbuster, and I love this counter. But Ted slips away and nails him with the loaded glove for the win. I just love that psychology of it could have been either or, but just one counter led to the big win with the loaded glove win. Ted's leaving, and the masked superstar sucker punches him and roughs him up. And then Dick delivers another brainbuster and lays him out. I still don't understand why we transitioned out of the singles feud into a tag feud so quickly. Nonetheless, the match is worked perfectly off the angle, and then we get this great post-match angle to take the feud to another direction. I gave it 4 3/4 stars. I easily could have given it 5. I probably should have. So there we go.
Yes, you should have.
Okay, just epic. Yeah, I'm with you, man. It's definitely one of my favorite blood feud matches with Magnum Tully, Lawler, Dundee. Oh man, yeah.
I'll tell you, it's I think it's my favorite match we've watched since we've been reviewing stuff from NWA on demand.
Okay, it's definitely in my top 3 or 4. I was a mark for the Terry Funk Mark Lewin match because I didn't see that one. I couldn't believe how incredible that was.
This was the emotion.
This might be my second favorite one. Yeah,
the emotion that and, you know, that's what I look for.
Yeah,
in wrestling, it's I want to feel something with it. And when you look, Magnum Tully is all about emotion. So's Lawler Dundee. So's this, and it's just dripping with storytelling and hate and. Yep. And that Houston crowd, especially that ringside, it just is the cherry on top of the presentation of this. I normally really don't like matches without commentary. Not a fan of it. Okay. You know, I like the
yeah, I know you
the
love
whole
it.
Presentation.
Yeah.
Because of that crowd and the ringside people, I was getting commentary from them. Yep. On this match, and it just I'm gonna stop because I could talk about this for hours. It's fucking perfect. I yep. love this so much.
There's another classic in Houston, man, and God,
that's amazing,
incredible stuff. I mean, I'm just I just can't put over the match enough. It was that violent and nasty and everything you want in a blood feud, and it's just awesome. Two pros. Maybe they threw a couple punches in a couple spots, and that was it. I mean, and they got all on story. That's what's missing, man.
And storytelling and emotion, and you know what? Acting.
Yep.
Ted always looked desperate.
Yep.
Throughout this whole thing, and Murdoch looked like not pure evil, because that'd be campy, just mean.
Yep.
Just mean. And then when he's on the defensive, though, he looks scared.
Yeah.
You know, but he's not a chicken shit either. It's just
good.
It's the nuances in two big Texans beating each other up with punches and blood in this is outstanding. It's outstanding.
Yeah, remember, guys, you get this on NWAOnDemand.com. First week is free. It's $8.99. I mean, that's a great price. First week's free. Come on, check it out, man. Johnny, you got anything to plug?
Oh, no, not right now. Just, yeah, that. go watch this match, people. If you don't, you're a bad wrestling fan, and I don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah, man. Follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. Have a great night, folks. Thank you. Have a good one.
So I pout like a grown jerk, wishing all I had to do now was finish homework. It's true, you don't realize really what you got till it's gone, and I'm not gonna sing another sad song. But sometimes I do sit and reminisce and think about the years I was raised back in the day.
Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore, but some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore, but some days I sit and wish I was a kid again.
And everybody
back in the
say,
days when I was young, I'm not a kid
and everybody
anymore,
say,
but some days I wish I was
when.
A kid.
And everybody
back in the
say,
days when I was young, I'm not
when.
A kid anymore,
back
but some days I sit
back in the day.